more seconds here. Oh, is Aaron on?
Yes, sir, I'm here.
Oh, there you go. I didn't see your picture. There we go. Scott Cole.
Yes, sir.
How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. Good seeing you.
Good seeing you, too.
We miss you, Scott.
Thank you. Good to be missed.
All right. Let's see. And I got 7 o'clock, so we'll go ahead and get started. And thank y'all for everybody that's on board here that's watching. So welcome. And so we'll kick off the meeting with an invocation. Heather is going to lead us. So take it away, Heather.
Okay. Dear Heavenly Father, thank you for letting us have the technology to be able to meet during these times. I'm glad that everybody is healthy enough to meet. Please let us make great decisions tonight for the town and do everything that pleases you. Amen.
All right. Thank you. All right. We got a flag up there. So it says, please stand. But there we go. Thank you, guys. I pledge allegiance
to the flag
of the United States
of America
and to the republic
for which it stands.
One nation
under God.
Indivisible
with liberty
and justice for all. All righty. Thank you, Aaron, for putting that flag up. All righty. I'll call the meeting to order. So we'll open it up with public comments. Aaron, did anybody sign up for public comments? Because we've got 19 people on board here.
No one is indicating. I'm going to unmute everyone now. So if someone would like to speak at public comment, they can do so now.
All righty. Would anybody care to speak on any subject? All righty. Well, that'll take care of that. So next we'll move down to the agenda approval. Alex, go ahead and do we need to add your two?
Yeah, if you don't mind, Mayor, at any point you feel is appropriate.
Yeah, go ahead. What are the two?
Sure. There are two items real quickly. It's LVT flooring costs for the town hall renovations, and then secondly, phase two transitions.
All right, let's make both LBT, the flooring 5A, and then the phase two transition 5B. And during the 5B phase two, I told y'all we'll talk about Ashley's recommendations to the council on the park based on that. We'll just discuss it in that in phase two transition and lump it all there in together. Anybody else?
Hey, Mayor, this is Brad. I don't know if I needed an amendment for this. I wanted to get council's consensus to have our attorney work on that interlocal agreement discussion we discussed. I sent an email about with the P3 intersection. I don't know that needs to be an agenda item, but unless there's any objection, I'd like to have Mac McCarley take a look at amending that for the purposes of the funding of that in a different way.
Well, I know I saw Heather responded. Does anybody else want to talk to Brad offline or right now, or what's the pleasure of the council?
I'm good. I'm good with looking into it further.
Yep. Same.
Same.
All right.
Thank you.
There you go.
All right. Thanks.
Yes, sir. All righty. Any other agenda amendments, deletions, additions? All right. Can I get a motion then to approve the agenda with the addition of 5A to go over the LBT flooring and the 5B phase two transition?
So moved.
Motion by Mr. Martin, second by?
I'll second.
Second by Steven. All in favor, say aye.
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 Yeah, we'll do that just by All righty. First up is Stevens Mill, Lawyers Road intersection, and turn it over to Chris. Thank you for being here, Chris.
Thank you, Mayor Dunn. Union County has entered in a professional services agreement with RSNH to develop cost estimates and design alternatives for 6 intersections from the critical intersection analysis. We've invited Mr. Scott Cole and Mrs. Allison Drake from RSNH to present council with the 2 design alternatives and cost estimates for the Lawyers Road, Stevens Mill Road intersection, and also provide a little context of how we came to that and have a little discussion about the public engagement. We had 2 meetings in March and also a public survey that was submitted. So if Assistant Manager Nichols, if you could give Ms. Allison Drake control of the meeting at this time, she can move forward with her presentation. Thank you.
Ms. Drake now has hosting capabilities.
Okay, thank you. I'll start sharing my screen here. Okay, are you able to see the PowerPoint presentation?
Yes.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. We got it.
Great, thank you. And thank you, Chris, for the introduction. As you said, I'm Allison Drake and Scott Cole is here as well. We're with RSNH and we are leading the effort with Union County on the critical intersection analysis project that he mentioned. And that's what we're going to be here to talk to you about today. We'll be discussing the project background, the intersections included in phase 1, the process of the study, and then discuss the Stallings intersection, including the selection of preferred alternative and next steps. As you are aware, Union County is growing rapidly, and this has led to increased congestion and safety concerns in the county's transportation network. In 2014, the county determined a need to conduct a critical intersection analysis that would allow the county and its municipalities to work together to be proactive about transportation improvements and compete for funding. The analysis began in 2016 when 54 intersections were identified for improvements. Out of these intersections, 15 were selected for additional study. Several of these intersections have been funded, and in 2019, the county elected to conduct a new study which identified 15 additional intersections. 11 of these were selected for additional study, 5 intersections which will be studied later this year in phase 2, and 6 intersections were studied under phase 1, which we're here to discuss with you today. One of these 6 phase 1 intersections is located in Stallings, which is the Stevens Mill and Lawyers intersection. In studying these intersections, Union County and its municipalities formed an advisory committee that Justin Russell is a part of and has been involved in every step of the process. The analysis began with data collection as well as traffic and safety analysis that included a field visit. Based on data gathered and analysis results, we developed 2 alternatives for each intersection. The public was then engaged for feedback through 2 in-person meetings as well as an online survey. These results were used to select a preferred alternative for each intersection. Cost estimates and recommendations are being compiled into a final report, which will be used to give Stallings and other municipalities a leg up to compete for funding for these projects. In addition to the 2 in-person public meetings conducted, an online survey was conducted using ArcGIS Story Map, which provided an interactive map for the public to review and comment. A total of 42 responses were received for the Stevens Mill and Lawyers intersection. In the first alternative, we added several turn lanes to achieve the capacity needed for the 2035 design year. For the southern leg of the intersection, 1 additional lane was added to accommodate northbound dual lefts and an exclusive right turn lane. An additional through lane was also added for the westbound Lawyers Road to receive these dual lefts and allow 2 lanes to travel to 485. And then lastly, we added an exclusive eastbound right turn lane. This alternative allows full access to remain to the Stevens Mill neighborhood, but the westbound left turn lane and adjacent concrete median over here modify the neighborhood entrance at the Millwright Lane entrance to right in, right out for safety. Crosswalks were also added to all four legs of the intersection, as well as sidewalk connections, including along Lawyers Road to the courtyard at Lawyers Development. As this project progresses into final design, the proposed greenway connection could also be included into the shopping center. This alternative potentially reduces crashes by 25% and reduces vehicle delay to 32 seconds in 2035. However, the additional widening required to accommodate the new turn lanes has higher impacts to adjacent parcels, and the addition of the eastbound right turn lane would likely require a retaining wall along Lawyers Road. All of these things caused the total cost of this alternative to be $2.4 million.
Allison, can I ask a question on that?
Yeah, absolutely.
The right turn lane from Lawyers to Stevens Mill, EPCON was supposed to give us some money to improve that intersection, if my memory serves me right. And so, Alex and Chris, how do we get that money, or is that money set aside somewhere, or am I misremembering?
Yes, sir, you are correct, Mr. Mayor. The town received funds from the EPCON developer as part of the EPCON Lawyers Road project to improve transportation in that area. And I believe that money is being held within the town's fund balance. So we've got it.
All right, good.
How much was it again?
I want to say $250,000. Chris, do you know the exact amount?
That's it.
Yeah. That's $250,000.
Thank you.
Thank you, Allison. Sorry about that.
No, absolutely. All right. So some of the things that we heard from the public was that they liked the improved safety of the intersection, including the full access to the neighborhood at the main intersection instead of at Millwright Lane, where there's not an existing signal. They disliked the higher cost, and some residents of the neighborhood did not like the reduced access at Millwright. Other comments received included concern for the close proximity of the EPCON development entrance to the intersection and drivers traveling at high speeds and running red lights. Also, a comment was received to consider a roundabout at the intersection. We did consider a roundabout. However, during the traffic analysis, we determined that it would need to be a dual lane roundabout. This would have high impacts and costs due to requiring the same additional turn lanes that are shown here in alternative one. And in addition to that, we'd also need an additional lane for the eastbound Lawyers Road past the shopping center. So I'll pause here if there's any other questions about alternative one.
Well, Allison, Scott will remember this because I've asked DOT before to look at the speed on Lawyers Road and Ottawa Road due to the downhill grading coming from 485 and the number of trucks that happen to use that road. So, DOT looked at it, I don't know how long ago it was, 5 years ago, and determined that it wasn't justified to lower it to 35. But with the increased traffic, is that something y'all can look at and make a recommendation? Or, Scott, chime in here if you want, or Allison, what do y'all think about that?
Well, we would be deferring back to DOT on that one, Mayor.
Gotcha.
And certainly they could look at it any time, but, they have to look at how that's going to operate 24 hours a day. And when you artificially lower speeds, then you have a bigger speed differential when some people obey the artificially lowered speed limit and others travel the speed they feel comfortable driving. And so that bigger speed differential can result in bigger problems sometimes.
All righty.
How does this, this is nice because it's just that one intersection though. How does it look going further to our left there with Alan Black and what's going to go in there before it gets to 485? So within a quarter mile there, there's 485, Alan Black, and this one. What would that look like to the left?
So the alternatives here, and let me actually switch over, see if I can get out of the slideshow here, if you bear with me a second. So this is actually the interactive story map I was referring to, so I'll come over here. It's a little bit easier because we can pan through the whole alternative a little better than we can on the PowerPoint screen. But this is the intersection you were talking about here with Allen Black.
Uh-huh. Yes. Right.
So we went ahead and incorporated the improvements that were going to be done as recommended for that TIA. And what this is allowing us to do is actually have two lanes that are going to go all the way to 485 and from 485 to the intersection. So essentially a four lane typical between those two intersections, and then a full movement here at Allen Black.
Is that going to create a safety issue there at Allen Black, crossing two lanes of traffic, or really three now, plus with the additional turn lane that the NCDOT added? And if those cars are going 45 miles an hour plus.
Yeah, I can say that intersection, from my experience, will be one where folks will be wanting a signal very soon.
And DOT will put it that, since it's that close to 485, they'll do it, you think, Scott?
Well, that's probably about 600 feet. They'd have to, there's a number of analysis that they'll need to do. One is a traffic signal warrant analysis to make sure that there's sufficient volumes to warrant a traffic signal. And then they can model a signal at that location to see how that would operate with the traffic volumes that you're dealing with, especially on Warriors Road.
All right.
I guess this question is for Scott. Could those warrants not be investigated in this process? I mean, I don't quite understand why we would have to wait for that. It would seem more efficient to do all of this in one process.
So yes, they can be, Ms. Paxton. However, the four lanes that we're looking at here on the screen are not in a funded project currently. So, you know, it's when they're imminent, at such time they're imminent, then the department could look more closely at what those conditions might be and what would be needed there.
Can you say that again? You said this is not yet the four lanes is not part of the funded project. Can you clarify that real quick?
Yeah. So what we were tasked, RS&H was tasked to do by the county, was to consider two design alternatives for six different intersections. And so that's what we have here. And we're presenting the one intersection, Lawyers and Stevens Mill, that was in the town of Stallings to the Stallings Town Council tonight.
Okay, I got you. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. All righty. Any other questions on this? All right, take it over, Allison.
Let me switch back to the PowerPoint, so bear with me here if I get this, the screens. Okay, we're back to seeing the PowerPoint now.
Got it.
Yep.
All right, great. All right, so moving on to alternative two. This alternative changes the access to the Stevens Mill neighborhood at the intersection. It allows only right turn egress under stop sign control, but it allows no ingress for the neighborhood at the main intersection. By removing this leg of the intersection from the signal phasing, this allows the other three legs of the intersection to have additional green time and therefore increase the intersection's capacity while utilizing the existing pavement. Because no ingress is allowed into Stevens Mill, the existing eastbound lanes would be restriped to a through lane and an exclusive right turn lane. Also, full access to the Stevens Mill neighborhood would be accommodated at Mill Right Lane. Pedestrian accommodations for this alternative match those that are from alternative one, including the crosswalks and the sidewalk connections. This alternative potentially reduces crashes by 25% and reduces vehicle delay to 31 seconds in 2035. Due to utilizing the existing pavement, this alternative has lower impacts to the adjacent parcels and results in a total cost of $700,000. Some of the things that we heard from the public was that they liked the reduced impacts and corresponding costs for the alternative. They also felt that this alternative was safer for pedestrians because they would have less lanes to cross at the intersection. But they disliked the reduced access to the Stevensville neighborhood as it's more challenging to turn at the Millwright Lane neighborhood entrance down here without a signal and ultimately less safe. The other comments reflected here match those from alternative one. So I'll pause here if there's any questions regarding alternative two.
Have any study been done on the safety of, I guess, the left turn coming out of Millwright? That's what I'm hearing the most from the residents up there, especially regarding this particular design, was they felt because of the grade of the hill from the westbound traffic coming there on Lawyers Road, they felt that turning a left out of Mill Grove, especially an unprotected left, was extra hazardous.
So we did look at that in the field. Sorry, Allison. We did look at that in the field, and there is a little hill just to the east of here, kind of off of this map. There is adequate sight distance there, but there's not an abundance of sight distance. And I will say, you know, that's kind of one of the concerns that we had with selecting this as a preferred alternative, was that those lefts out of Millwright, although the predominance of traffic, especially in the morning, is going to be a right turn out heading towards 485, those lefts out would have issues finding gaps in traffic, and would, you know, potentially have operational, in other words, difficulty getting out, or safety issues getting out. So.
Aaron. Hello?
We can hear you.
Yeah, I lost video.
So with this particular plan, there would be no red light operating that would let people out of Stevens Mill. It would all be stop signs.
That's correct.
Okay.
Given the funding shortage that DOT has now, there's quite a difference in the cost for these two projects. How important do you think cost will be in this decision?
I can pontificate on that a little bit. You know, I think in the short term, DOT is definitely struggling. And there's going to be some longer term repercussions, I expect. Now, the funding that the town might go after would be some of that discretionary funds that CRTPO controls, which are federal funds. And so the fact that those are federal funds, and I think, you know, the first several years of those funds have already been encumbered, meaning that this would be 4, maybe 5 years out. Ms. Paxton, I don't think that would be a major issue.
And not that I'm suggesting this, but I do want to point out that the delta between the amount that EPCON kicked in and what we've spent contributing to other traffic projects in town isn't that much. So, I mean, it's a large sum of money, but I guess there is an option there if we want to pursue it to move the timeline up. But again, that's a long discussion.
Any other questions on this alternative?
Did we lose any, I guess, is there any concern in the fact that you lose the two lanes coming out? And I mean, it seems like that would potentially could hamper some type of future development, you know, years out from now, if we need to take and go two lanes there. So on the left-hand side of that intersection on Lawyers Road.
You know, I'll say certainly that could be something that could be done in the future or potentially incorporated in this project. And it's just not something that we included in this concept design, nor in the cost estimate associated with it. You know, that has an additional benefit. I will say that surprisingly enough, the amount of delay associated per vehicle with this and with this design and with the other design with all of the lanes is like within 1 second. I mean, it's just very close.
Okay.
I'm sorry, Scott, this is Brad. Can you say that again? That last, I didn't understand that.
Sure. Oh. So what we did in this analysis, as far as the traffic operations are concerned, is we basically took traffic counts today. And then we worked with the town and the county on growing those to be 15 years out. So we did a 2035 traffic analysis, basically thinking that it would take roughly 5 years to get the project funded and maybe built. And then the project would be fully functioning for another 10 years. And this alternative, the way this alternative operates from a capacity analysis standpoint, the amount of delay associated with this configuration and the amount associated with the amount of delay associated with the other configuration are extremely comparable. I mean, the analysis software said like within a second, and that's for the software to be that close, it's like a match, basically.
So alternative one and two in the 15 year plan function similarly with the traffic flow perspective, right?
That's correct.
Okay.
It basically accommodates the same number of cars, you might say.
And did I hear earlier, if I may continue, Allison and Scott, that alternative one, which seems to be clearly the neighborhood preference, is a full movement intersection, just clogs up traffic a little bit more, you would think. But option two or alternative two creates a safety issue at whatever that small road is, Mill Right Lane. On a left turn. Did I hear you say that correctly, that alternative two is cheaper, but is it ultimately less safe because of that? Hard to say.
Yeah, I'd say, I mean, you know, everything has a trade-off. I'd say that the issue there at Mill Right Lane is an issue that would need to be resolved somehow. I'm concerned about putting in other words, installing building alternative two and leaving that the way we show it there.
Okay, thank you.
Would there be an option or has NCDOT evaluated lowering the speed limit to 35 miles an hour in this area? And would that improve the safety of any potential changes with either option one or option two?
Like I was saying to the mayor earlier, that could be done, but artificially lowering the speed limit, in other words, just putting in a 35 mile an hour sign, does not mean people are going to travel 35 miles an hour.
Sure.
If someone feels comfortable traveling 45, 50, they may do that through this intersection. And then it's just going to be that much harder to determine what the gaps are to get out from Mill Right, and may result in a crash, maybe even a serious crash at that location.
So
can I? My name is Peggy Booth, and I live in Stevens Mill. May I add a comment or two?
Sure. Who is this? Peggy?
Peggy Booth. I live at 8125 Stevens Mill Road.
Okay.
And I have been aware of this and made comments that obviously were in that presentation that Allison gave. As most of you are probably, should be aware, the probably average age of the people who live in Stevens Mill is closer to 70. And having a right turn and then having to make a U-turn or whatever the case is going to be in order to go in the opposite direction, to me, is completely unacceptable. The fact that the mill right left turn is substantially harder to do is also unacceptable. So I do hope when you're doing all this, I've only lived here for just under 2 years, but it seems like I've been in a constant battle with stallings, either with EPCON or now with this road, and I'm finding it a bit frustrating, and I think a lot of my neighbors feel the same way. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Can I ask another question?
I had one quick question that I know bit us once as a town before I was on the council. I mean, when was this traffic study? I mean, when we did the counts of cars and kind of that we used as a baseline, when was that study done? Do you have the dates on that?
They were done at the end of 2019. So the end of last year.
Was that, I mean, we had one that was done, like, I think on a Wednesday before Thanksgiving, and, you know, the numbers were completely not correct. So, I mean, was it kind of early December, mid-December, kind of, do we know what that was?
Yeah, I believe, and I could pull up the exact dates, but it was early December. We usually try to keep in mind those things when we're getting the counts, because we understand things like school traffic or holidays or even events can really affect those numbers. So we, you know, usually do our best to try and pick dates that best reflect the traffic in the area.
Okay. All right. I just wanted to make sure, since I know it was something that came up before. All right. Thank you.
All righty. What's next, Allison?
All right. Well, here we have a side-by-side comparison of the two alternatives. So ultimately, the advisory committee agreed with the public that alternative one is the preferred alternative pending council approval. So I was just going to pause here so that we can discuss what the preferred alternative would be.
I'm taking it that the alternative one that was chosen by kind of the people, most of those people were from Stevens Mill neighborhood.
Yeah, we did get quite a bit. And let me go back a slide. Sorry, I think I jumped too fast. Yeah, so here out of the 42 comments that we got, you know, you see a majority of those were for alternative one. And I believe it was spread on Nextdoor. So we did get quite a few comments from the neighborhood.
And then here it says number, you know, roughly a third said neither. Was there a prevalence as to why they didn't like neither?
No, we did have the one comment that I mentioned earlier about the roundabout, putting that here. But as I said, the traffic would require that to be a dual roundabout. And right. Since this road is in a dual, you know, it's not a four lane cross section, we would have to add in those lanes. So essentially it would be the same impacts and additional lanes that we were seeing with that alternative one.
Okay.
Can I also clarify, you're saying alternate one, and what is alternate one?
So alternative one, and I flipped here so you can see it, we're calling that the lane additions. So that's the addition of all the lanes without changing the access to the Stevens Mill neighborhood at the main intersection.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Well, I like the first one better than the second one. If we're supposed to be discussing it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We need to make a decision right now. So let's talk about the funding, Allison and Scott. I know you mentioned CartPost got some funding, but where else would we be going for funding, or how much would be expected from Stallings?
So the federal funding that the CRTPO has as discretionary funding requires a 20% match, 20% local match. Now, that does that mean that has to come out of the town's coffers? Not necessarily. It sounds like you have $250 from a developer. That could be part of it. It really doesn't matter what the source of it is, as long as it's non-federal money. So the local money could be state money as well. And if you have a crash problem, there are state safety funds that could be considered and help might help to reduce the town's responsibility for the local match.
All righty. Well, that's good to know about the state money. So we're talking $480,000. And we already have $250,000, so.
And let me say too, Mayor, one thing I wanted to mention about the CRTPO process is they do encourage local contribution. And one of the ways they encourage it is if a locale will put in a higher percentage, then they score higher in their ranking process and have a higher likelihood of funding the intersection.
All righty, what's next there, Allison?
So just want to make sure were you good with all this and selecting alternative one as the preferred alternative?
Well, we haven't. Yeah, I'll ask for a motion here in a second, but okay. after you're through.
Okay. All right, then I'll move on to the next steps here. So the next step for the critical intersection analysis project is to complete a study workbook and an action plan for all of the intersections. And so with the information we provided tonight for the Stevens Mill and Lawyers intersection in Stallings, the town and the county can consider potential funding sources and then apply for funding. The critical intersection analysis will move to phase two later on this year. However, there are no Stallings intersections located in phase two. And so thank you again for the opportunity to present. And so I'll just open it up if there's any more questions.
All right, thank you, Allison. Scott, any questions for them, council?
Do we have an estimate of how much land we're gonna need to acquire right there on the west side of the intersection, both the south and the north side?
Yeah, I can pull up the exact number, but certainly one of the ways that we were looking at reducing those impacts, and actually you can see it pretty well from this image here, there's a pretty steep incline on that side of the intersection there.
Yep.
So that's why we were looking at potentially a retaining wall just to pull off the backyard of some of those residences that are right there along the back of the road there.
Gotcha.
So we're looking at that to potentially minimize. And as it moves further into more detailed design, I would think that there would be some areas that could be looked at like that to try to reduce some impacts.
Thanks, because that's been one of our big hangups. And one of the reasons we didn't push so hard for it with EPCON, because we knew there would be some impact there to, I think that's Hundley Creek, and those residents that are built right up against the road. So.
Right. Yeah, I think regardless, they'll probably be impacted by adding that right turn lane in. But like I said, there could be some things to mitigate that, such as retaining walls.
Okay, thank you.
All righty, any other questions? Chris or Alex, Anything we're missing that you would like to point out?
Mayor Dunn, I had a quick question for Mr. Ake and Mr. Cole. Mr. Cole, you mentioned, great to see you, by the way. You had mentioned the 20% local match. Obviously, construction estimates when we finally get there.
You're missing my study, honey.
Whatever we're going to construct could change, could go up. So would our 20% local match, would that be locked in the STIP initially, or could it go up if construction bids come back higher than estimated?
So it is not locked in. Certainly, you know, when you apply for funding, you state what your match is willing to be. And then, so that at that point you are locked in. When you receive the funding, you are locked into that amount, the amount that you're willing to contribute.
So what are they saying about it?
I think they're going to lean toward number one.
What's number one?
Now, you know,
hold up a second. The public, the people that are talking to public, Peggy, we can hear y'all because it's not, everybody's not on mute. So just be aware we can hear everything you say.
Mayor, could I make a suggestion real quick? Ms. Drake, do you mind turning over hosting capabilities to Manager Nichols, please?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, I stopped sharing. Does that pause? Does that transfer over host capabilities?
If you hover over Ms. Nichols' name, there'll be a blue box that three dots come up. And if you click on the blue box with three dots, there should be something that says make host.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, she should be the host now.
I am, thank you.
Okay, so as I was saying, when you apply for funds, you state what you're willing to contribute. Okay, if the cost of the project goes up from that point, then usually the way it's written with the DOT municipal agreement is that the town's responsible for 100% overrun, for 100% of anything over the what was stated in the project cost in the municipal agreement. But the way that usually works is the town, you know, works with the MPO. Typically there's some other funding available. The town goes after that funding. There may be a match associated with that additional funding. But you just have to explore options with what you're willing to contribute, what you're able to contribute, and what the Department of Transportation might be able to provide as well.
Thank you, sir.
And then how is the timing of this work? What's the schedule for this when we select an alternative?
Well, you select, hopefully you're able to select tonight. Then I think the MPO has set up kind of a schedule where they will do a yearly call for projects based on funding availability. And certainly when that became available, and I don't know the exact schedule of that, the town would have a leg up in that you've already got a concept design, you've already got a determination of cost, and you're ready to submit a request.
So we have to be ready every year. It could come up.
That's correct.
All right. So we would need to reserve those funds. Okay. Thanks, Scott. All right. Any other questions for Scott or Allison? Well, I think it's clear the public has spoken that they prefer alternative number one. It's obviously more money. But I think if we're looking for into the future of 2035 to 2050, that certainly is the road that was what we'll need, in my opinion. But I'll turn it over to the council. Any discussion or anybody ready to make a motion? What's y'all's pleasure?
Mayor, I think with always when there are different designs, there are advantages to each of them, but clearly I think alternative one is the better option for us at this time. So I make the motion to have council go on record as supporting alternative one for the Stevens Mill Lawyers Road intersection.
Second.
Was that David?
Yep.
Yep. All right. We got a motion by Linda, second by David. Any further discussion? Ms. Nichols, could you do a roll call, please?
Yes, sir. District 1, Martin, how do you vote?
Aye.
District 2, Scholl, how do you vote?
Aye.
District 3, Paxton, how do you vote?
Aye.
District 4, Grooms, how do you vote?
Aye.
District 5, Ayers, how do you vote?
Aye.
District 6, Richardson, how do you vote?
Aye.
All right, that's unanimous for alternative 1, so... Allison and Scott, certainly appreciate y'all being here tonight. Scott, I hope you're making the big bucks in the private sector. or less stress, maybe.
Thank you, Mayor.
Yeah. So we'll turn it over to Chris and Alex, and they'll be in contact, I imagine, and we'll go from there.
As you move into your next items on your agenda, I think Allison and I will probably drop off.
Right, okay. Thank you all for being here.
Thank you.
Mayor. Thank you.
All right, next up is the 2019-2020 amended budget ordinances. So we'll turn it over to Marsha.
Sorry, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Gotcha.
Okay. All right. Erin, I'm just going to let you scroll down. I did send a memo out to the council, and it explained pretty much everything that, you know, has to do with these. I'm not going to go through line item by line item unless I have questions. These are pretty straightforward. These are items that have been decided upon in the past. So, and decisions were made. These are just either changes to accounting measures and or standards and just making them correct for our books for year end. Okay, so the first one is budget amended budget ordinance number 8. And this relates to the transfer of the park and rec maintenance people to the from Public Works to the Cultural and Recreational Department or Park and Rec. This happened in accordance actually with the study that was done, the pay and classification study, and they recommended that we transfer those employees to this department. When that happened, it started in January, as of January 1st, but we did not move any of the budget money for salaries for these folks. What I did is chose the, I took the number that was budgeted through the end of the year or what was spent through the year and took it off of what the budget number was, and it was $20,000. So I'm transferring $20,000 really from the expense from Public Works to the Culture and Recreational Department. Are there any questions on this amendment?
No, ma'am.
All right, can I get a motion? We'll do these individually. Can I get a motion on budget amendment number 8?
Mayor, I make a motion that the council approve ABO number 8.
All right.
Budget amendment.
Motion by Mr. Ayers. Can I get a second?
Second.
Second by Heather Grooms. Any further discussion? All right, Ms. Nichols, could you do the roll call, please?
District 1, Martin.
Aye.
District 2, Scholl.
Aye.
District 3, Paxton.
Aye.
District 4, Grooms.
Aye.
District 5, Ayers.
Aye.
District 6, Richardson.
Aye.
All right, passes 6-0. Thank you, Marsha. All right, now 3B.
Okay, you want to scroll down a little bit? This next amendment is, it relates to, it relates to the transfer of funds for, I'm explaining a little bit of how these actually work. The general fund is something that you budget for every year. It doesn't transfer. If you have funds appropriated to a capital project fund for that year, or you have funds that you appropriated to, you know, say to stormwater, and it didn't happen, just as we do, the Potter Road Pleasant Plains is a very good example, because we keep appropriating the funds to that project every year, but it's not cumulative. The general fund has a budget that ends every year. It's not a perpetual fund that goes on until the project is over. Capital project funds are perpetual funds. So while we have a, when we set up the project fund in the very beginning, that budget for that fund at the end of the first fiscal year was $3,441,600. But that included a total appropriations of $315,600. And we had only appropriated at that point in time $96,997 last fiscal year, in fiscal 19. So that means that $218,693 had to be reappropriated in 2020 in order for us to spend it on this project. It doesn't increase the project itself. It doesn't make the total for the project go up, because it was already appropriated. I mean, it was already, the project budget isn't affected by this, but the general fund budget was. So in order to make this correct, we have to actually, and if you look at the actual, this particular funding for this, it's all within the general fund. There is no money going into the capital project fund. It's revenue of general fund appropriation of $218,698, and the expense is the transfer to the capital project fund where it's actually spent, and that's the $218,693. And if we don't do that, we would actually go over budget in appropriations in the general fund. And what happened at the end of last year to these funds, had we spent them last year, it would have been fine. But because we didn't spend them at the end of the year, they go into a bucket, and that bucket, it's the unrestricted fund balance. It goes back into fund balance if you don't spend it. Just as we budget expenses for departments and things, if you don't spend them in that year, it goes into fund balance. So this just cleans that up. Do I have any questions on this? This is a little bit more complicated, I know, but...
So, I mean, just kind of help me understand. I mean, this is definitely not my area of expertise, but I guess I would have thought that you would have seen a decrease in one and an increase in the other. Can you kind of just focus in on why it's an increase to both?
Well, the way that you transfer money into another fund, number one, you had to have the general fund has zero money at the beginning when you talk about the revenue in that fund. If you're planning on, and your funds have to be balanced, so your revenue equals your expenses.
Okay.
Because, okay. Yeah, because you don't have, you're planning on taking that out of kind of like a retained earnings or a savings account. That's what your fund balance is. So because the revenue was coming from, we knew from the very beginning that we were going to spend some of this money out of the general fund to cover expenses for the building. We had to appropriate the money from the fund balance and give it to that fiscal year in revenue. And we also do it in expense because it's being transferred out of the general fund into the capital project fund for use.
And I missed that it's an expense. So it, even though it looks like a increase, it's actually a decrease.
Yes.
So I got it. I missed one little word there. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. Anyone else?
No, Mayor, I'll make a motion to approve amended budget ordinance number 9.
All righty. Can I get a second?
Second.
Motion by Mr. Richardson, second by Mr. Shaw, I believe.
Yes.
All right, and any further discussion? All right, Ms. Nichols, could you please do the roll call?
District 1, Martin.
Aye.
District 2, Scholl.
Aye.
District 3, Paxton.
Aye.
District 4, Grooms.
Aye.
District 5, Ayers.
Aye.
District 6, Richardson.
Aye.
All right, 6-0. All right, next up is 3C.
Okay, that is the amended budget ordinance number 10. This one truly relates to what they call capitalized interest during construction. The GASB came out with, and GASB is the general or the governmental accounting standards board statements. Number 89 came out, and they felt that the funding for a project needed to be that of the governmental unit, not of the project fund itself, and should not be capitalized because it does not add value to the project. Which in essence, I understand what they're saying. You know, it used to be that they would let you capitalize interest from construction. You were able to include that in the cost basis of your building when it was going on. They don't allow that any longer. And that happened this past fiscal year. So in other words, we had at the beginning, it happened that they said that they wanted you to do it starting December 31st, 2019. So when we had made our budget, we had the note interest being paid by the project fund. And we also had, we were capitalizing that. We were going to. So what this does, we had budgeted $98,250,000. So this money does affect the project fund. It's reducing what we were going to appropriate for this year for interest or for the next year for 2020, takes it out of there. And I have to do a journal entry actually to back out all of the interest expense out of that capital project fund back to the general fund, which makes it so much easier, to be honest with you. But in short, we have to take it off the appropriated funds for this fiscal year and put those, not that $98,250 needs to be added to the general fund's budget because it wasn't in there. We had no debt interest being paid by the general fund. So while this is no fund balance appropriation new fund balance appropriation, these are funds that were already budgeted and just moving them out of the capital project fund into the general fund. And we had budgeted $98,250 for interest this year. So you can see it going into, it's a reduction in that transfer to the capital project fund. It is an increase in interest on note in the general fund. And then in the capital project fund, it reduces the transfer in and it reduces the interest expense. Any questions here?
All righty. Thank you, Marcia. What's the pleasure of the council?
Mayor, I'll make the motion to approve a budget amendment number 10, the capital fund interest expense.
All right. Motion by Ms. Paxton. Second.
Second.
Second by Mr. Ayers. Any further discussion? Ms. Nichols, could you do the roll call, please?
District 1, Martin.
Aye.
District 2, Scholl.
Aye.
District 3, Paxton.
Aye.
District 4, Grooms.
Aye.
District 5, Ayers.
Aye.
District 6, Richardson.
Aye.
All right, that passes 6-0. Thank you, Marcia.
Thank you.
All righty, next up is the Regional Cabarrus-Stanley Union Regional Hazard Mitigation Plan Resolution.
Say that five more times.
I tell you. They had to put regional in there twice, I guess, to make sure we knew it was region. So, Alex, I'll let you explain what this is.
Sure. Thank you, Mayor. And just real quickly, so the counties of Cabarrus, Stanley, and Union counties back in 2015 adopted a regional hazard mitigation plan that looks at kind of natural disasters and human-made disasters in our area, and assess our community's hazard risks and determines how to be less vulnerable when disaster strikes. So you essentially have to adopt these every 5 years or so. And by adopting it now, we are ensuring compliance with federal and state guidelines and ensuring we've got an updated plan that we can use in collaboration with our regional partners, and also allow for us and our region as a whole to be eligible for certain grants that inevitably will arise in the coming years. So would recommend approval of this resolution. The plan is finished and meets all standards according with the state and the federal guidelines. It's been approved by the state. Really the only thing it's waiting on is concurrence and approval by all the local jurisdictions.
All right, any questions for Alex?
Mayor, I make a motion to approve item number 4, Regional Cabarrus Stanley Union Regional Hazard Mitigation Plan Resolution.
Our motion by Mr. Richardson, second by Mr. Scholl, is that correct?
Yes.
All right, any further discussion? Ms. Nichols, could you do the roll call, please?
District 1, Martin.
Aye.
District 2, Scholl.
Aye.
District 3, Paxton.
Aye.
District 4, Grooms.
Aye.
District 5, Ayers.
Aye.
District 6, Richardson.
Aye.
All right, passes 6-0. Thank you, Alex.
Thank you, sir.
All right, number 5, holding required community meetings remotely. So, Lynn, you take it over, or is Alex? Who's going to make it?
I'll be glad to address that, Mr. Mayor. Staff is requesting that council consider adding community meetings to the recently adopted virtual meeting policy. What a community meeting is, it's the first step in the conditional zoning process. Applicants are required to hold a community meeting before staff can forward their application on to the planning board or to town council. What the meeting is for, it gives the applicant the opportunity to present their proposal to neighboring property owners and to address any questions they may have or concerns. We are currently in receipt of 2 conditional zoning applications that we need to process. So we will need to be scheduling community meetings within the next month. So we wanted to bring this to your attention and hopefully have them added to that virtual meeting policy so that we can begin processing these applications.
All righty, and then Melanie has done the research and made her recommendation, correct, Lynn?
Matt McCarley did, yes, sir.
Matt did the research, okay. All righty, any questions for Lynn? All right, can I get a motion on this, please?
Mayor, I'll make a motion to approve staff's recommendation for a policy holding required community meetings remotely.
All right. Can I get a second?
Second.
All right, motion by Mr. Richardson, second by Mr. Martin. Any further discussion?
All right. I just want clarification. Is this an amendment to the policy we adopted, or is this just another policy to allow us to do community meetings remotely also?
I can address that. Mayor Pro Tem Paxton, this would not be an amendment to our existing electronic meetings policy. This would just be simply a vote to allow this basically while the state is under a state of emergency. The rationale being the electronic meeting policy that the town council previously adopted, that deals with public bodies, if you will, whereas in this situation, this is a community meeting, which isn't really a meeting of the town council or a committee or something like that. So it would just be a simple vote just to allow this until the state of emergency is lifted by the governor.
All righty, any other discussion? All right, we have a motion and a second. Ms. Nichols, could you please do the roll call?
District 1, Martin.
Aye.
District 2, Scholl.
Aye.
District 3, Paxton.
Aye.
District 4, Grooms.
Aye.
District 5, Ayers.
Aye.
District 6, Richardson.
Aye.
All right, passes 6-0. Thank you, Alex and Lynn.
And thank you.
All right, next up is 5A, the LVT flooring. Everybody should have seen the email, but doing the cost analysis, but I'm sure y'all got it handy that you can throw it up there.
Can everyone see that?
Yes, yep. Ma'am.
So just to kind of tee this up just a little bit, we went back and we worked with Rick with Boomerang and with Haas Henson with Haas Construction, and they gave us a cost estimate on the LVT, which is the exact material that is in the lobby of the new town hall. This is a very durable material. I think Ms. Paxton was speaking to that at our last meeting also. So if we go with the LVT throughout the first and second floor lobbies, it would be approximately close to a $5,000 savings versus if we did carpet where it's currently carpeted on the first floor and then redid the hardwoods, which is all of the second floor and the entrances on the first floor.
Would this, I like the savings, obviously, but would this cause any delay?
No, sir. It should not cause any delay. They should be able to get this material in, and we weren't close. They weren't ready to do the flooring at this time anyway.
All right. Thank you, Aaron. All right. Any questions?
Well, I know I asked a couple of questions during our preview call with Alex, and the understanding is LVT is more durable, and I'm taking it. I mean, obviously, this is where the town staff is going to be working at. I take it that they prefer the LVT.
Well, this is actually in the lobby, so it's actually right when you come in the building by the stairs, and then it'll be upstairs, like outside of the elevator, and then outside of the restrooms. The LVT flooring, though, is what was going to be in the reception area where Ms. McCall will be sitting. So this would be a smooth transition if it was all the same material from the reception area as well.
Okay.
I'm all for it.
All righty. Well, any other discussion, questions? What's the pleasure of the council? Can I get a motion?
A move that we move forward with the LVT product in the first and second floor lobbies.
All right. Motion by Mr. Martin. Can I get a second?
I'll second.
Second by Mr. Ayers. Ms. Nichols, could you please do the roll call?
District 1, Martin.
Aye.
District 2, Scholl.
Aye.
District 3, Paxton.
Aye.
District 4, Grooms.
Aye.
District 5, Ayers.
Aye.
District 6, Richardson.
Aye.
All right, that's 6-0. Thank y'all. Thank you, Aaron. And then lastly, 5B, the phase 2 transition. So, Alex, I'll turn to Aaron, who's going to lead that?
Lead that, Mr. Mayor. Thank you, sir. So, I wanted to touch base with us being in phase 2 of the governor's reopening plan. Wanted to touch base on three general areas of how we're going to be reopening certain phases, kind of taking those first steps with the ultimate goal of things getting back to normal eventually. So one area is kind of workforce. The second area is responding to citizen inquiries. And then the third area is park amenities. So with workforce, we're going to be, ultimately our goal is going to be to continue to provide essential town services while ensuring the safety of the public and employees as we begin to transition of workforce and services into phase 2. So different departments have different locations, they have different job duties. And if you think about it within the town, some positions have really completely different typical days than others. Some folks may be in an office most of the day, while other folks may be in a patrol car, for example, for a lot of the day. And because of that, and because of some of the just locations and realities, for example, the second floor of the old town hall being under construction, we needed to take different approaches for each of the departments while at the same time setting requirements across the board when it comes to things like social distancing, wearing a mask in certain situations, personal hygiene, making employees responsible for sanitizing their own personal work area, things like that to ensure we're keeping staff safe. So because of the differing approaches from differing departments, we're going to have a range of approaches as we take the first steps to transitioning back to normal ultimately. And those approaches are going to range from staggered shifts, split schedules, teleworking, and any other creative solutions that we may have in order to keep people safe and still meet departmental goals. The second area I wanted to touch on was citizen inquiries. So if you call in, you should be able to kind of get a response, and we should be able to get you to the person that you need to talk to, just like before. With Town Hall currently being a construction site, that creates some practical challenges there. But what we've done over the pandemic is we've put in a large sign outside saying when folks come there to call a number, and we can help them over the phone. Or if it's an issue that perhaps someone wants to talk with the police officer or needs to talk with police for whatever reason, someone from police can come out and talk with them outside at a distance, obviously maintaining that same social distancing and helping them. Our foot traffic in Town Hall has been relatively low. If you don't count like UPS deliveries and things like that, we typically have anywhere from 0 to 3 folks per day coming up there that maybe ask a question or see someone. So it's a relatively low number as far as foot traffic goes. So I wanted to share those first two items and then kind of share briefly with you what we're, the plan is for kind of park amenities. So before we go there, are there any questions or concerns or anything I might be able to address with those first two areas?
Sounds like you have a citizens that's not happy there at your house, man.
Yeah. Careful, I'll show up on the review.
Yeah. No, I think those are pretty straightforward, make the most sense.
And I want to recognize our staff for really rolling with the punches and being willing, flexible. You know, we feel like I have demanded a lot from them as far as keeping staff services running and making sure we do as much as we can during these trying times. So I want to recognize staff for that. And secondly, I wanted to kind of just bring up the phase two services for parks and just run through those real quickly. And Aaron, can you give me the hosting controls real quickly, please? Thank you. Okay, can everybody see those areas, the phase two services?
Yes.
Yep.
Yes.
There are several, I think, three key areas that when we looked at these, we wanted to make sure we were doing. First was we wanted to make sure that we're in compliance with the law. The second is we wanted to make sure that we are in compliance with really safety protocols and just like we would with any other services, OSHA reasons, things like that, make sure we're following safety best practices. And then thirdly, we want to make sure whatever we're doing, we're able to do based on resource limitations. Because some of these services that are coming back, there are additional legal and safety things that we have to do, and we want to make sure that we're able to meet those. So real simple chart, and I want to direct recognize Ashley and her staff. She has been working routinely with other Union County Parks and Recreation directors to try to make sure that the approach is uniform and to bounce ideas with, because everybody's having a lot of the same challenges we are and having a lot of the same legal issues. So as far as yes goes, park restrooms will be open, tennis courts will be open, disc golf course will be open, walking trails, outdoor exercise groups of no more than 25. As far as no, playgrounds will not be open. That's in accordance with the state executive order for public playgrounds. The splash pad will not be open. Shelter rentals will not be renting the shelters, but I want to specify that the shelters will be open. The reason for that is we just wanted to make sure that everyone who was there had the opportunity to use the restroom if they needed to and could do so safely. Water fountains will be not be functional, and there will be no mass gatherings in accordance with the executive order of any group over 25. And obviously it goes without saying, but following the safe social distancing and hygiene protocols that all the experts are calling for right now. So that's a quick rundown of those services. So if you have any questions, I'll try to talk through them, and our Parks and Rec Director Platts is on the line too, and she can provide a better explanation than I can, I'm sure.
Yeah. Thank you, Alex. So I saw this, the one issue I had was the playgrounds. I certainly know it's in the governor's executive order, but I don't see why compared to what's happening out in the country. But the other thing is, when something like this comes up, and the training I've received as mayor and the advice I've gotten from other mayors, specifically Governor McCrory, is council needs to approve something like this, because we're held accountable for it. And I appreciate Ashley and staff putting it together, but I'd like for council to if they approve it tonight, to make a vote on it, so it's on the record that it's council's decision to do this. So that's my thoughts. I don't know if anybody wants to buck the system and put playgrounds over in yes, or just go ahead with what's on the table here.
Oh, I like to buck the system.
Yeah, is your?
I didn't know it was an option.
is the playground in Fairhaven open?
I want it to be. Maybe if y'all open y'all's, we can open ours.
Well, this doesn't apply to yours. You can do what you want.
No, I'm saying we could use you if we could use you as an example.
Oh, okay. So, well, that's one vote for moving playgrounds over to yes. So what's the pleasure of the council?
I'll make a motion to approve this as submitted.
Can I ask a quick question?
Sure.
From a legal perspective, I mean, like, I know that there are certain requirements for cleaning and things like that there. If we were to open up the playgrounds, do we need to have somebody there cleaning, or is it kind of at the public's own discretion, or kind of how does that work?
Here would be my two concerns. There is, it's not necessarily the hard surfaces problem, it's the close proximity. And so you open up playgrounds, especially right now, you're going to have everyone and their four kids clumped into a small area. And the math being what it is, sooner or later, there's going to be some issue. I just don't want the town to be held liable for that. So I that's kind of my two cents, and my biggest concern is the spacing rather than the hard contacts.
Yeah, what's the liability?
Yeah, well, anything that happens on a playground.
If I could speak on that, we just got some new recent guidance from OSHA on liability when it comes to COVID-19. And there is a pretty strict, you have to prove that you got it from a certain location. And that goes for employees more so than the general public. I would assume that the requirements would be the same for the public if we're talking about general liability. However, we have gotten guidance from the the League of Municipalities that that most general liability policies are pulling COVID-19 to do a special survey on how liability will be impacted by that. We don't have that full guidance. It's a decision.
I couldn't hear very well. So we wouldn't be very likely to get sued, or we would be?
We don't have the answer yet from our insurance carrier, but they are looking into it. We just don't have a firm, agreement one way or the other from them.
Well, once we get that answer, we can always come back and make adjustments on the which column we want, the playgrounds, splash pads, rentals, or not the rest of them. So,
understand being responsible, and I feel like if you don't want to catch it, don't come.
Is there any guideline at this point about when the state intends to have playgrounds open and swimming pools? I think I saw something on the news tonight about that would be happening in June. Ashley, do you or Alex, anyone know what the plan is for those next steps?
Yeah, swimming pools are open.
Yes, Ms. Paxton, from all indications, I'm on a bi-weekly call with the state directors for North Carolina of Parks and Recreation. And from our conversations with DHHS, it looks like that would be coming in phase three. And we don't have a specific date on phase three yet, but it looks like it could be the end of June, early July.
Yeah, but swimming pools are open now. I mean,
swimming pools are open now. Yeah. Splash pads have been deemed to be more like playgrounds than swimming pools. But right now, our biggest contention with a splash pad is we still have to get our operating permit through Union County. And since Union County was closed down for such a long period of time, we don't have that yet. But we are working toward getting that so that when we are able to reopen, we're ready to go.
All righty. So I got a motion from Mr. Scholl. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Richardson to accept the chart as is. Any further discussion?
I have a question as to how much staff will be expected to enforce this, because I think things are loosening up, and I feel sure there will be people trying to use the playgrounds. Are they roped off or anything to prevent people from actually accessing the play equipment?
Yes, ma'am. They're currently roped off. The playgrounds are, we've taken down the barricades around the tennis court and the restroom facilities, but the playgrounds are still roped off.
All righty, any other further discussion? All right, we got a motion and a second. Ms. Nichols, could you please do the roll call?
District 1, Martin.
Aye.
District 2, Scholl.
Aye.
District 3, Paxton.
Aye.
District 4, Grooms.
No.
District 5, Ayers.
Aye.
District 6, Richardson.
Aye.
All right, motion passes 5-1 with Ms. Grooms dissenting. All righty, well, that'll do it. Appreciate y'all's attendance and all the work. Hey, what's that, Brad?
Hey, Mayor. I won't delay the meeting any longer, but since Ashley's on the line tonight, y'all gonna think I'm crazy. But as the historical committee and those signs we're putting up in the next budget year, it occurred to me that in about 5 years, I know you think I'm crazy, we'll be at our, I forget the term for it. It's our 50-year town birthday celebration. There's a fancy name for it. I'd like for Ashley just to go on record tonight and just ask Ashley to begin thinking about that. It doesn't require a lot of time now, but I bet we're going to be surprised how quickly we'll get there. And I'd like her to give some thought and have a couple years to think through it, because I think that could be a great opportunity for town harmony, economic development,
everything regarding our 50th celebration. So no vote required unless you need it, but I just wanted to kind of plant that.
We don't need a vote or anything on like that. Appreciate your thinking about it though. Any other comments? All right, can I get a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Mr. Scholl. I think that was Mr. Martin, second. All in favor, say aye.
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 Aye. All right, pose. All right, thank y'all. Thank you, Aaron.
Heather, you don't have to move very far.
What?
You don't have to move very far.
No, I don't. I got to go get our pool ready.
I like that.
Thanks.
Good night, y'all.
Are you in your pajamas, too?
No, I'm in my Stalling shirt.
Okay.
Bye, y'all.
Bye.
Take it easy, guys.
Night.
Night.